Welcome to the Bucket List Life Podcast with Trav Bell, the world's number one bucket list expert. Bucket List Life's mission is to help you get off the treadmill, stop Groundhog Days, hack your habits, and live a regret-free life. Because we know life's way too short not to live your bucket list life. So please welcome your host, Trav Bell, the Bucket List Guy.
Hey, bucket listers, welcome to another episode of the Bucket List Life podcast. I've been really, really looking forward to having this conversation with Nick Kemp, the Ikigai coach. Mate, is that how I say it, Ikigai?
That's how you say it. Well done, Trav. Good to be on the show. Thanks, mate.
You are the Ikigai coach. Mate, straight off the bat, what the hell is Ikigai?
Well, I think it's perhaps one of the most misunderstood words and concepts from Japan. So very briefly, ikigai are the things in your life that make you feel that life is worth living. So it can be relationships, it can be hobbies, it can be roles, it can be even memories or goals you're working towards.
Yeah, fantastic. And it is a cultural thing in Japan. What's the origin of it? Like, how did it all start and how did it kind of get westernized?
Okay, so there's a few theories about the origin of the word ikigai or the concept, and it has evolved over time. One theory is we need to look at the word. So the word is a compound of ikiru, which is the verb to live, and kai or gai, which means value. And one theory is that going back almost 1,000 years ago, shells, kai, Some shells were hand-painted and used in a game called Kaiawase. And Kaiawase is a shell-matching game. So awaseru means to match and kai means shell. And so you'd have these beautiful hand-decorated shells that only the affluent or the wealthy or, I guess, the imperial court could afford. And so wealth became associated to these shells. And so with time, that became to be associated with value. That's one theory. Recently, ikigai's obviously in Japan related to, just these things that makes life feel worth living. It's very subjective. So to the average Japanese, ikigai might be their hobby, their pet. If you're a grandparent, their grandchildren, it could be your job. For young Japanese, it's usually associated more with passion, you know, things they want to do. And then as you age and with life experience, you kind of realize the things in life that make life worth living are these things that give you a sense of being grounded or calmness. Yes, it's very subjective and it's not a word Japanese even talk about, really. And they don't really use that often. But as I've shared with you, there is this huge body of research that's been growing since the 1960s. But as you also know, it's sort of been butchered and misunderstood by,
We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second, mate. Yeah, that's a hot topic here. How did you arrive? Like, you lived in Japan for what, 10 years? And how did you become the Ikigai coach? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, there is a lot of people kind of, you know, talking about ikigai, and those of us in the coaching space, life coaching space, if not even business coaching space, talking about psychology, talking about happiness, talking about fulfillment, purpose, flow, and all that, we all know, I dare say, of ikigai. But as the ikigai coach, what was the impetus for you to get in, you know, involved in this and start to, you know, understand the concepts and then obviously pay it forward? You know, was it something in your life where you needed to find more purpose, more fulfillment, that sort of thing? Or just, hey, great idea, I think I'll pay this forward.
Well, there is a personal connection to the word and a history. So I was introduced to the word in 1998. I have a very vivid memory. So I think when that happened, there's sort of a long story behind it, but I was just basically on a lunch break. It was my first day at this new job. And I was trying to show off my Japanese, being young and ambitious. And this coworker just very casually said, "Oh, Nick, what's your ikigai in Japanese?" And I'm like, "Ikigai, what's that?" And, you know, at the time I was learning Japanese, so I was really keen on learning new words.
Based in Australia doing this?
No, I was in Japan.
So
I was
actually living in Japan. Okay.
In Tokyo. I could take you to the spot where she asked me. The memory of it so vivid. And then I remember going into work the next day thinking, "Oh, I've got to talk to this girl about this word ikigai again." And she'd been transferred. And I remember the disappointment, like, "Oh, no." And so I really didn't know anyone else. So I just thought, "Oh, well, and life moved on. And then, yeah, 20 years, I start seeing the Venn diagram and Ikigai in blog posts. And I'm thinking, I remember that word, but I don't remember it like that. And that's not how Japanese would understand it. And I kind of thought, oh well, that's probably just a Western interpretation. But then, of course, I kept on seeing it. TED Talks came out, the best-selling book. And I just thought everything about Ikigai is factually incorrect online. Someone should do something about it. And initially, I thought it can't be me because I don't really understand what it is. I just know it's not that. But with time and that little voice started to really agitate me and said, well, why don't you do it? So that's what happened. So I started researching it and it uncovered this incredible world of content and perspective. You know, it's a cultural concept, but it's also a universal concept. And I have all these incredible people to thank because it all started as a passion project with my podcast. And I thought if I could interview one Japanese researcher or author that could kickstart it. And then to sort of now answer your question, I discovered the concept's very coachable. It's, you know, it's relatable to positive psychology and yeah, these themes of flow and life satisfaction and sense of purpose. And with some encouragement from you, I sort of, I've taken on this, you know, this mantle or this idea of being the Ikigai coach, but that's what I do. I coach the concept and I also certify people so that they can coach the concept.
And before meeting you too, Nick, like, you know, just full disclosure here, guys, if you're watching, listening to this, you know, Nick, how long have we been doing coaching for, Nick?
Is it three and a half months?
3.5 months. And it was really stepping into your superpower, which is teaching this concept. You know, someone's got to, who's the world's expert in Ikigai? Well, you know, there was kind of no one. Same as with bucket list, right? Who was the coach around bucket list? Oh, everyone was teaching bucket list, but, you know, it was all about travel. You know, we've got the movie, and the movie, as those of you who have seen me actually do a keynote speech, I say the movie is shit because it's about two blokes that get given a cancer diagnosis and then they write their bucket list. So I say the movie is shit. So we're trying to, I guess, disprove some of these, you know, concepts out there and kind of make it our own. And you've done that. There's been a appropriation, would you say, a cultural misappropriation of Ikigai?
Absolutely. And the irony is it wasn't really intentional, and it was someone who I ended up interviewing, and it was this guy Mark Wynn, who kind of playfully merged Ikigai with the Venn purpose diagram. And for him, it was nothing more than that. Like, he wrote a short blog post on it and he was just going to share it with his network. And then it got picked up 6 months later. And I mean, this is really interesting. The Venn diagram on purpose was out there. It had been translated. And then for some reason, when you replace it with a Japanese word, it all of a sudden goes viral. And yeah, people now think Ikigai's this sweet spot, you know, finding your perfect dream job or something.
So we're not gonna highlight this book too much, mate. You knew I was gonna do this.
I should have got, where's mine? I should have.
Yeah. Bring yours up first as a comparison. But
we find it.
Just down the, yeah, go and grab it. All right. You show me yours and I'll show you mine. That is your book there, right there, Nick Kim. So Ikigai Kan, what's that all about?
So Ikigai Kan, Kan means perception or awareness or feeling. So Ikigai is something you feel. So you have Ikigai sources, as I said before, people, relationships, hobbies. And then you have all these feelings associated to the sources. So if you have a hobby that gives you that feeling of freedom and excitement and joy, that's Ikigai Kan.
Now, I'm going to give old model versus new model. So I guess this is where it's been misinterpreted. Yes, there's a best-selling book called Ikigai, and it says the Japanese secret to a long and happy life. So they've come up with this famous, you know, diagram here, and this is what we call a Venn diagram. You know, four, in this case, it could be three or four intersecting circles, and that in the middle is Ikigai. And we're going to get onto your model, Nick, which is what I like, is do what you love, what the world needs, what you can be paid for, what you're good at. And then in the middle is your Ikigai. Let's say your calling, for want of a better description. And that, you know, from that here, it says that should have a waterfall effect into what you're passionate about, what your mission is, what your vocation, what your profession is, which is kind of the same thing. Interesting. So at the end of the day, it's been adopted by so many coaches out there versus your model, mate, which is more culturally applicable, right? And, you know, you've had struggles with that. Struggles is probably an understatement, but you've been fighting that fight because it is misinterpreted. It's not what it really, really means in Japanese culture versus what you've got on the back of your book. Let's show that just quickly.
I mean, I will say that that Venn diagram, it's inspiring and helpful. It's just not Ikigai. So let's be clear on that. So I have a framework that might be, it's a bit of sunlight, hang on, anyway. This is the work of a research pioneer called Miyako Kamiya, and she discovered essentially there were 7 Ikigai needs, and that's life satisfaction, change and growth, a bright future, resonance, which is your social relationships, so social affiliation, freedom, self-actualization, meaning and value. And then she also wrote on the importance of having a sense of purpose. I don't know why she didn't describe purpose as a need, but she did say you will feel Ikigai most intensely when you have a strong sense of purpose. So maybe that's sort of like the icing on the Ikigai cake. Her study group for these needs were actually Japanese lepers, and they were shipped off mainland Japan, had a pretty shitty life, but she found out that some of them could have a life of Ikigai if they were able to satisfy a majority of these needs.
Well, okay. Didn't know that bit. And so you've gone deep though, like rather than just create your own, you know, screw that old model, that westernized model, if you like, and I'm going to create my own that's more culturally appropriate to Eastern philosophy, right? Or the Japanese culture. You've gone deep and you've got, you know, a myriad of different guests on your podcast. And what's your podcast again?
The Ikigai Podcast.
There you go. The Ikigai Coach has the Ikigai, you know, podcast. So not hard to find. But you've got research, you know, you've got all this background in research, and let's be honest, you're a bit of an academic around the whole subject. But you've got, you know, tell me about some of the research, some of the, you know, Japanese research that you've sort of poured into your model there, because that really gives us some, you know, real concrete fabric.
And that was important to me. I didn't want to just say
you hung out there. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to piss off everyone that you know over in Japan.
Exactly. No, I wanted to remain very respectful to Japanese culture. And then I discovered, wow, this is not just one of these beautiful, amazing words that Japan has. This is a word that has a huge body of research, like a growing body of research. So my programs, it's all evidence-based. So every module, every idea is backed up with either a research paper or research from an author. And I've been incredibly lucky. The guests I've interviewed, some have become very important in my community. They've done webinars for me. I actually hosted an Ikigai Summit earlier this year. We had over 10 researchers join. So yeah, the evidence, being evidence-based, was really important, but obviously including cultural elements and sort of pointing out how Ikigai is, it's universal, but how Japanese approach things is different. In the West, we have this tendency to rah, 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 and, you know, let's be the best version of ourselves and let's go crazy. Where in Japan, they approach things, you know, with smaller steps and more respect, and they can pace themselves and they really focus on the detail. And yeah, that's an interesting way to live your life, to live it with more care and more patience and more perspective, and not trying to find, yeah, just tell me what it is, kind of, just tell me the answer, this attitude we have.
You know, I kind of know the answer to a lot of these questions because of our coaching relationship, but how do you coach someone in Ikigai, or how do you coach Ikigai?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. So, I mean, I have two roles. So I almost train coaches or train psychologists on the concept, and I have a really structured modular program that introduces all these sub-theories of Ikigai. I think I've mentioned one to you, this concept called Ibasho, which is this idea of your place to be, where you're in a social niche, where you feel safe and secure, where you feel empowered by these relationships, but you also have a bright future to look forward to, so you can sort of self-actualize. And then if I'm coaching an individual, it's really about focusing on, you know, what's meaningful, a lot of discussion, a lot of almost shared perspective, and then getting them to action small things towards either making change or towards a goal?
What would be an example of that? You know, like if you're playing it out with a client.
All right. Well, let's think of one. So let's say you're highly ambitious and you have many goals, and I discover, wow, these are extrinsically motivated goals. They're about success, achievement, getting things. I might try and dive into those and say, why are these important to you? Why is getting the car or earning so much so important to you? And hopefully through that, we discover like the reasons behind that are something else, and they're more intrinsic. So I try and move them to an intrinsic perspective, and then focusing on what matters to them also, you know, not just in the future, but now. And then how can they connect, you know, now with the goal, but have it more, internally or intrinsically motivated, and sort of move with that.
That's actually such a different way to coach too. Like it follows, you know, some of the basic from what I know anyway, you know, the pills of positive psychology, right? So it's very closely related, you know, how to positive psych is you know all too well. It's about helping people find what brings them meaning, what gives them purpose, what gives them a sense of fulfillment, more gratitude, and identifying their strengths and basically bleeding more of that into their work and into their life so they have a happier life. Would I be right in saying that?
Right. As you know, I've just done a one-week intensive on positive psych, so my brain's melted. But yeah, it was this focus on positive emotion, engagement, relationships, goals, and we need to focus on how we feel sometime or every day. How do I feel? What's going to make me feel positive? What's going to give me joy, excitement, comfort?
In the now, in the now, in the present, because the anxiety that surrounds goals is the fact that people live in that gap between where they are and where they want to be, and it creates anxiety, depression, fear of failure, fear of disappointment. So post-psych, ikigai, kind of the same thing, get people present to where they are and be happier right in the now.
Absolutely. And then there's also the idea of, you know, resilience and bouncing back and facing adversity and doing things that challenge you, because once you do that, you see more of yourself and you realize, I didn't realize I could overcome this fear, or I didn't realize I can bounce back if I, you know, face and focus what needs to be done.
Yeah, I've got to admit, when I was at 12, 13 years ago, when I came out as the bucket list guy, or someone called me the bucket list guy after the first seminar that I ever put on. And it was, you know, Tal Ben-Shahar in the book Happier. Great resource. And in there, you've got another Venn diagram, funnily enough. We're full of Venn diagrams here, and hopefully I can find it in time. But we've got one that's, here we go, doesn't want to show it. So it's another one called the MPS process. And that is a Venn diagram, three intersecting circles of what gives you meaning, what gives you purpose, and what are your strengths. In the middle is your calling. So I got motivation speaker after that. But it was a sign. I also did Ikigai, Western model, sorry, mate, but Western model at the time. And I'm sure if we knew each other and your work was in front of me, I would have done yours as well, just to, I guess, recalibrate on what this bucket list guy personal brand and the ecosystem surrounding it, what that meant to me, you know. And I didn't want to go out there and do something that was incongruent with who I am. So it was working out my values, working out my strengths, what I wanted to put out there in the world, what it could be paid for as well. So there wasn't any sort of cognitive dissonance between what I was putting out there in the world and who I was as a person. So at the end of the day, did a lot of that kind of, I guess, soul searching, for want of a better description, at the time of launching the Bucket List Guy. And I know you have too. So how do we live in Ikigai? How does that play out on a day-to-day basis for people that are interested in this concept and, you know, I guess mapping it into their worlds?
I mean, you've already touched on it. So this idea of being aligned or living or expressing your values is crucial. And I often say that that's sort of my go-to answer. If you want to feel Ikigai, it's feeling, it's not achieving. And it's not really even finding, because it's usually there. You're just not in tune with your values, and you just uncover these ikigai sources. So it really is about understanding what your values are, living those values, being aligned with them, or being, you know, true to them. But it's also very much tied to your social world. And more of the research just kind of reminds me, we need meaningful relationships. We need to feel that we matter in some way to the people who define us. So in our various roles, and that we want to help others. We want to see other people flourish. And so, yeah, it's kind of, I think it's possible for some people to have ikigai where it might be, you know, very personal to them, their me time. But I think you feel it more intensely when it's connected with others. And yeah, there is a sense of purpose behind that. And that doesn't mean you have to be starting a business or changing the world. It could just mean if you go out with your mates, you have a good time, and maybe you're the kind of guy who makes sure everyone gets home safely. Or, you know, you could be the guy who is the life of the party and makes everyone laugh. Or it could be involved in your community and you help people, neighbors, whatever in your community. So yeah, the social world, it is tied to your social world.
Hey, tell me, while we're on that, what's the relationship between, say, ikigai and the blue zones longevity? You know, there's some direct crossover there, and obviously a blue zone over there in Japan, which has been heavily studied. But and there's been a Netflix special. I just had Marcus Pierce on yesterday too. He did an episode, and he's gone and visited, and he takes people into blue zones and, you know, talks to the locals. And then, yeah, like it's really interesting. There is a crossover, yeah? Or is that just, am I making that up?
Well, you're not making it up, but I think it's, again, this is a Western romanticization. So Dan Buettner came up with the five blue zones. He's a National Geographic fellow, and his research is accurate. Like, doing all these things, obviously eating a healthy diet and having strong social connections helps. I guess what's interesting about Okinawa used to have the longest lived people in the world. Going back when he started his research in 2000 or in 1999.
And just for the reference, Dan, what's his name?
Dan Buettner.
Now, what was his special on Netflix?
Oh, the Blue Zone. So, yeah, how to be 100.
How to live to 100 or something?
Yeah. But he did a TED Talk. So this is how Mark Wynn got inspired to do that blog post where he merged the Venn diagram, because Dan Buettner did a TED Talk like over 10 years ago, 13 years ago. I think, on the blue zones when he first introduced it. And he briefly mentioned each zone. And when he talked about ikigai, he said, oh, they have this, you know, lifestyle where they grow their own vegetables. They have a largely vegan diet. They have strong social connections. They're drinking together. They have moai, which is this concept of childhood friends that they grow up with. And they have this word that imbues their life, ikigai. And it kind of gave that romantic spin on the word. Your ikigai can be a coping mechanism. So it could even be alcohol and cigarettes. So ikigai is something we've kind of made up in the West that's related to happiness and longevity.
There's a YouTube short, mate. Your ikigai could be alcohol and cigarettes. All right, and end.
Edit
that clip.
Do it. Yeah. So it's more of a Western romantic perception. Now, purpose, I think there are studies on purpose. That's if you have a strong sense of purpose, it has all these health benefits that kind of prolong your life. So that is true. And if we take purpose as one of the core aspects of ikigai, we could say, okay, yeah, that's possible. But most Japanese do not think of ikigai as some sort of key to happiness or a secret to longevity. That's Western marketing, really, of people selling their books or Netflix selling the program. And this will shock you. Okinawa is now the least healthy prefecture in all of Japan. And that information is coming directly from Dan Buettner. He went on the Rich Roll podcast a few years ago and said, everything is flipped. You know, the prefecture with the most junk food intake now. Alcohol is not taxed in that prefecture. Probably because of the American base over there. So everything's, what's the expression? It's gone down the shitter. So it's not good. So this is kind of blows away that myth that Okinawa is, you know, this island of longevity. Now, the centenarians, yeah, if we go back to them, yeah, that's a great lifestyle to look at. But it'd be very hard for you or me or our listeners to model that lifestyle. Like, we're just not going to have the same diet.
We can take bits of it, though. We can take bits of it. We can take bits of the theory. We can take bits of your coaching, of course. Mate, here's a question for you. given all, and by the way, you know, like how many people have become Ikigai coaches around you now? You've got a tribe of Ikigai coaches.
Yes, yeah, so 70 now, I'd say. I think we're close to mid-70s, yeah.
We're talking psychology. Well, who are the typical kind of people that do that go through your cohorts and, you know, become an Ikigai coach, you know, accredited from you?
Yeah, I mean, I remember my first cohort, I had a psychologist, a master coach, a doctor, a lady with two doctorates in education and applied science, people from France, from Germany, from the States, locally here. I actually, 2 days ago, I got someone who was clearly Japanese asked me if I'm offering the program in Japanese.
So there you go.
Kind of thought, wow, that gives me a bit of clout.
Well, that'd be a hell of a challenge.
That would be. I'd have to really scrub up on my Japanese and
have it get picked up by the Japanese government. Who knows?
Not sure about that. But on that, there are the, even
and your book becomes a cultural text given to all Japanese children.
That would be great. But just on that idea, there are actually now health and ikigai advisors in Japan. And so they're usually people who are of retirement age and they go through their own this certification program run by the government, and they help people who retire transition to a social life where they can, you know, do something meaningful and have a sense of ikigai. And so this is another thing, this romantic idea that all Japanese know their ikigai is BS. A lot of Japanese struggle with a lack of ikigai. There's all these problems with lonely devs, social withdrawal, hikikomori, all these problems. And so, yeah, they now have a program where they certify people to be health and ikigai advisors, and they use Camille Mirko's research and also Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So it's sort of the foundation of that program.
Yeah,
it's a real thing. It's absolutely a real thing. You can coach and teach, and they do it in Japan now. Yeah.
Very cool, man. Hey, Nick, just in closing, mate, here's a question I've got for you. Imagine a stadium full of people, big booming microphone up the front, raised stage. What would you love to say, and who would you love to have in the audience?
I'd actually love to have some Japanese people in the audience where I could remind them of their beautiful culture and of this beautiful concept. And then I'd like people who help others. So whether that's people like yourself or psychologists or coaches. And I guess the message would be it doesn't take a lot to feel ikigai. And one way you can do that is just by being kind and helpful to others. And whether that's a greeting and a smile to a stranger, to being there for your mates, or to significantly helping someone who needs in a coaching role or professional role or even just any non-professional role. So, yeah, helping others, maybe even more specifically, helping others with their ikigai is a great way for you to feel ikigai.
Boom, boom, boom. Okay, mate, what's the book? How can people get in contact with you? What's the best port of call for them to get in your world?
Okay, so ikigaitribe.com would be the website to go to. The Ikigai podcast, and buy this book for Christmas or for next year, Ikigai Khan, Japanese Wisdom for a Fulfilling and Meaningful Life on Amazon.
All right. There you go, guys. Nick Kemp, thanks so much, mate, for being part of this Bucket List Life podcast episode. Get around him. Got amazing, amazing background in this particular topic. And if some of the concepts that we've talked about today resonate with you, yeah, definitely get around Nick. Have a look at his podcast as well. Get the book. Thanks heaps, mate.
Thanks, Trav, and thanks for all that you do for me.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Bucket List Life podcast with the world's number one bucket list expert, Trav Bell. For more great content, go to www.thebucketlistguy.com. We'll see you next time.